Seven? Yeah. Okay, I'll move on to agenda paper 7 on accounting for recoverable cash payments from the government. The committee discussed this issue at its meeting in November and decided not to take the issue onto its agenda. The committee concluded that the payments from the government met the definition of a financial liability, and they also said that judgment would be required in assessing whether or not the payment would also meet the definition of a forgivable loan in IS 20. In response to the tentative agenda decision, we received 5 comment letters. 4 of the respondents are in agreement with the committee's conclusions. They have asked, some of them have asked for some clarity on the wording, which we have addressed in the paper. One respondent disagrees with the conclusion that the payment represents a financial liability. We continue to agree with the committee's conclusion that the cash payment does meet the definition of a financial liability. We have outlined our reasons in paragraph 16 to 19 of the agenda paper. Another respondent asks for some clarity on whether the forgivable nature of the loan would be taken into account, should be taken into account in determining the fair value of the loan at initial recognition. We think that the requirements in IFRS 9 and IFRS 13 provide an adequate basis to allow an entity to determine the fair value of the loan. We have clarified in the agenda decision that the loan would be accounted for applying the requirements of IFRS 9. And on the basis of our analysis, we think the committee should finalize the agenda decision. We have outlined the proposed wording for the final agenda decision in Appendix A. I will now turn it over to you to ask if you agree with our recommendation.
Andrew.
I broadly agree, but I've got a couple of comments. So the analysis acknowledges that a particular instrument might meet the definition of a financial liability and also a forgivable loan.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, so what next? Because I think back on derecognition, I'm afraid. I think that if it's a financial liability, we do recognise it on extinguishment. If it's a forgivable loan, I think we treat it as a government grant, which might not be derecognition, but it seems to be treating it as something other than a financial liability, at potentially an earlier point of reasonable assurance that the forgiveness conditions will be complied with. So I'd like to see in the analysis where do we actually get to, if it meets the definition of both and which takes precedence, because I think there might be something of a conflict there. Yeah. I also very disagree with the assertion that there is sufficient guidance on how to measure fair value. There is conditionality attached to the repayment, because that seems entirely inconsistent with the decision by this committee that in the context of contingently convertible instruments, actually whether we incorporate the probability of not having to settle that obligation into the fair value measurement or not was an issue that was too broad for this committee to address. So I think it's the same issue in measuring the fair value. Do we take account of probability, you know, yes or no, and we got no consensus in the context of the same issue in the issue relating to COCOs.
Bob?
I guess I'm back at the beginning where I'm struggling with whether this is a financial liability or not. In my mind, if I have a loan that's collateralized by a piece of property and you get the property if I default, I agree that's a financial liability. If I have a loan where I have a free choice, I can give you either cash back or the property, I thought that was not a financial liability. And it's similar to the reverse convertibles that I've seen where you can either give cash or shares. I've said that those are not financial liabilities. And so under this, I've been looking at it, and maybe I've got the facts wrong, as I have a free choice to pay the government back in either cash or technology, which suggests to me then that if I have a free choice to give you a non-financial asset to settle this, that's not a financial liability. Now, when I read your analysis, I read 20A, it says a financial instrument may contain a non-financial obligation that must be settled if and only if the entity fails to redeem the instrument. Well, that word fails is equivalent to me, at least, of the first analogy, which was the mortgage loan, where if I default, I got to give you the property. It doesn't, fails doesn't connote to me a free choice.
If I recall the facts, I'm struggling here a bit with your comment. The facts were that if the technology fails, the technology is not viable, which seems to me to be an objective test, then I don't have to pay you back, but you get the technology.
Okay, maybe it's just facts, because I thought the facts were if I decide not to exploit the technology, I give you the technology. But it was my decision whether I decide to exploit or not exploit the technology.
Okay. Point taken.
Although I think there is an implication that sometimes you need a kind of, you need to support it with a rational basis for not exploiting, but I agree. It's kind
by of the way, wait, I would agree with you. If it was that way, but you describe it, I'm there financial, you know, you don't have a choice. You must. I'm there. It's a financial liability.
John?
I mean, I think it's a financial liability for the reasons that the staff set out, but I don't think it's a forgivable loan because I don't think the lender has agreed to waive repayment. I think the lender has agreed to accept repayment either in cash or through the transfer of IP, and therefore, to me, it's not a forgivable loan because it's not waived under certain conditions. But I think it's actually a financial liability. I think there are some of the issues that have been raised about measurement, I think, are issues in terms of how you determine the fair value and whether you end up with that paragraph 10A of IAS 20. In other words, is there a concessional element to this particular loan when you measure the liability? And if there is, then that would be a government grant. But I don't see this as being, I mean, I think this is a financial liability for the reasons set out, and I don't think it's a forgivable loan.
So just to clarify then, sorry, John, that in your view then you would take out of the agenda decision any reference to forgivable loan.
Yeah. And I think just to go to that point, at the last meeting, I think the committee felt that because at the time of the repayment, if the entity decides to abandon the project, it may have limited to no value at that time. And therefore, I think some committee members were of the view that it could fall into both. It could be a financial liability, as well, recognizing the fact that it may have no value at the time of settlement. They felt that it could also meet the definition of a forgivable loan.
So I think if you consider the transfer of an asset for no value as being a forgiveness, then I think you're back to Bob's point, why is this a financial liability? Because I have the option to actually transfer the IP for no value or for not exploit it and transfer it. So if you think that's actually forgiveness, then forgiveness, the ability to have the loan forgiven is in the hands of the company. So,
yeah, thank you. With ASMA, we're still struggling with the interplay between 2010 and 2010A. When you come to the conclusion that there is no reasonable assurance that the loan will be forgiven, there is a financial liability, it is said. But due to the feature of the forgiveness, in combination with a normal interest rate, there is a below interest rate low. And then you are back in 20. Because the proceeds you receive will normally be much higher compared to the fair value. And that you have to recognize as a grant. And then a couple of years later, it appears that you do not pay back. You have again a profit because of the amortization, and you will have a high
effective interest rate for this loan, you have again. Is it a government grant then? Because are you then back in IS 20 because the loan is forgiven, or are you still in IFRS 9? Where are you? And that is where we are struggling with, and for us it's not clear from what is in the paper, to be honest. And that is what we meant in our letter, which was not fully understood. Maybe we had to elucidate better because of what I read in the agenda paper.
Let me try and jab it. I'm looking at you to make sure you correct me if I say anything that's nonsense, which is likely. I think you're right that there could be that paragraph 10A and IS 20 could be relevant here, because even though 10A is worded such that it's, I think, addressing a scenario where, let's say, if I were to go out and get a commercial loan, I'd pay 5% interest in this case because I got it for the government, they'll only ask me to pay 1% interest, sort of thing. The scenario you're saying is that this loan is probably priced at the commercial rate at the 5% rate, but of course, depending on whether the research is exploited or not, the entity might end up being able to pay back something with less value, I suppose, in a sense, than the principal amount. So there are similarities, at least to some of what's in 10A. I would have thought, and this is where I'm asking Java to correct me, is that you would still, so when you initially look at it, you would say this is a financial liability. I account for it and I measure it in accordance with IFRS 9, which sends me to IFRS 13. And in doing that and coming up with the fair value, I might decide that there is a piece kind of that is a government grant piece in a sense.
Yeah.
That then would stay in 20 to get accounted for, because that's the government grant piece, and the rest that is the financial liability simply gets accounted from day one forward as a financial liability within IFRS 9, including the derecognition requirement.
But based on which effective interest rate then? How do you determine the effective interest rate of that loan?
Yeah.
Because that's the question.
Well, I think that's, yeah, potentially not an easy answer, but applying IFRS 13 in terms of.
Yeah, but you have, when you come to the conclusion that the fair value is let's say 20% below the amount, the proceeds you received. In determining the effective interest rate, in our view, you have to amortize the difference between the 80% at initial recognition and the full fair value, which you are supposed to pay back.
So in other words, if you let me make sure I'm clear, what you're saying is I got 100.
Yeah.
I determined that the fair value of my obligation is 90.
Yep.
So I got a gain of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So that's below market interest rates.
Government grant piece takes to income.
Yeah.
Yeah, or at least you follow what the IS 20 says about government grants.
Well, 20 gives me several choices, but let's assume I take it to income for the moment. Then I still have the same contractual cash flow. So my effective interest rate is based on the internal rate of return between 90 and the contractual cash flow.
So it's a much higher interest
rate. It's a much higher interest rate than the stated interest rate.
Yeah.
And then if I reach the point at which this all goes bottom up and I abandon it, then I have a gain. But I can only recognize that gain when the government absolves me of obligation. I'm looking at the financial instruments team going up and down here. So
when it's extinguished. Yeah, when it's extinguished.
So that would be your approach to it.
Yeah.
And 20 might tell me, 20 gives me a couple or three different choices about where I put the credit. By the way, for your general information, the Emerging Economies Group at its meeting tail end of May is going to deal with or take up, not deal with, government grants issue broadly. And what we do as a replacement, potentially to 20. And in that space, that's certainly a significant problem. I've provided them this paper, which is only a little piece of the problem, but they're going to take it up from there. But anyway, let's go on. Martin?
I guess the point of tone is very, very important because in general, I mean, if I talk about research in general, the research probability is not 90%, it's only 10% or so, specifically for those cases which are subsidized by governments and so, yeah? So what would that mean then from the beginning onwards? So that would mean a potential gain of 90 or so, and I have a liability. This liability is conditional upon the future success of my research. So that means if I measure it with the probability of occurrence, so to say, it would increase over time, but that's an additional effect. It's not only the effective interest rate, but the probability that I have to pay back this liability also occurs over time and might increase from 10 to 70 and then go down to 30 again. And then, so it's very hard to measure. I guess it's challenging to understand the whole topic if you do not have some booking entries or so. So to be a little bit more case specific, and to go through this as Ton did or tried to do, yeah, with some journal entries, to be absolutely clear what we are talking about.
Kumar, you want to come in?
Just quickly, Martin, I agree. With the probability changes, you'll have the liability moving. But I'm not sure we are going to account for it because the liability is carried at amortized cost. So what happens is effectively, and I'm not going into 20, God forbid, I'm not getting outside FI. What will happen is normally if you have this, think of a loan which is below market rate of interest, which you have got, and you have a gain or loss, which you are deferring. It's the amortization pattern of the gain or loss, which matches up the higher interest rate to give you more or less the effective balancing. Here, the loan, I think, will be at amortized cost. You'll do exactly what Wayne said. You will amortize it up, but you will have, if you assess that you're no longer, you're absolved because the research has failed, then you will get that as a credit, which also will interact with the government grant, how you account for the government grant. But I don't think we are saying you will have to remeasure the liability for the probability movements, unless and until you elect to carry it at fair value, which you could, but will be a difficult proposition then.
Overall, in substance, are we really talking about interest or are we talking about reimbursements for R&D?
That's where the componentization comes in.
Take that as a rhetorical question. Tony?
So I think to an extent, picking up where Martin left off, I think we could make this as complicated as we wanted to. And I think in this committee last time, we decided not to. So with the previous paper that we talked about, spent a lot of time talking about, firstly, determining whether the loan was at a non-market rate, and so therefore there was government grant component, and a series of other bits. And we sort of said, well, let's not do that. Mm-hmm. We could make this extremely complicated. What we said was, well, seems to meet the definition of a financial liability. There might be circumstances where it also meets the definition of a forgivable loan. And I think the key difference then gets to derecognition. If we're in IAS 32/39, IFRS 9, derecognition is going to happen when it's extinguished. That's the point at which you hand over the IP. If you're in IAS 20, derecognition would be at the point you have reasonable assurance that you'll meet the terms for forgiveness. And I thought what we were saying was, yes, meets the definition of a financial liability, might also meet the definition of a government grant. Therefore, management's got to make a use judgment to decide. And I think if it does meet the definition of both, the scope paragraphs of the respective standards don't help because it would be in both. And there isn't any waterfall or hierarchy. And so I thought what we decided was to do something relatively simple and say, yes, it's financial liability, might also be a government grant. If you're in that bucket, use some judgment. And I guess I'd rather finalise this as it is, as we talked about last time, and say that without potentially making it an awful lot more complicated, which we could do, I think, relatively easily.
We've shown some propensity to do that today.
Very easy.
Reinhardt, and then I'm going to go to the phone.
I agree with what Tony was saying, and I think the issue I foresee is if we get into matters like measurement of the liability, we're going to get, I suspect, all boggled up along the lines of what Andrew said, because one could take the view that the fact that the commercial success of this product is beyond the control of both the company and obviously the counterparty. Therefore, you shouldn't reflect that as part of the fair value measurement under IAS 32. Mm-hmm. And so, as I say, there's all these measurement issues we get into, and I'd much rather just finalize it along the lines of what Tony said, keep it narrow, and there will be some judgment, obviously, that needs to apply.
Sandy?
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Hey, Long?
I would agree that in this scenario, the rules for forgivable loan in IAS 20 would apply. The entity recognizes financial liability until such time as it is repaid when the conditions for its forgiveness are reasonable or expected to be met. This is a financial liability because, as they in the staff paper, it has to be settled either by payment in cash or by transfer of intellectual property attached to the research and development project. Therefore, the entity would account for the liability as a loan and account for the IMD project in accordance with IAS 28. It will continue to account for the liability under IAS 39 or IAS 9, including the requirements in those standards to re-estimate cash flow. Only when the condition for ungivenness are reasonable expect to be met, would the loan be recognized. At the same time, any IAS 38 development asset would be recognized. Although it is possible at that stage that the intangible already been written off on account of criteria in IAS 38 no longer being satisfied. Any difference between the carrying value of the loan and the carrying value of the intellectual property rights is taken into P&L, that the difference could equally be classified as again or disposal of the intellectual property or as a government grant, but probably in both cases will be, I'm not sure, other income in the statement of comprehensive income.
Okay, so Fei Long, I'm not clear on where you are in terms of this issue. Do you agree with the staff analysis that this is a financial liability under IFRS 9?
I agree.
Okay.
I
think we've tried to limit this to specifically the facts of the submission. So now I see. Okay. Martin?
Sorry, only one last comment.
I agree that we are talking about an amortized cost liability. Within the fact pattern, we say the potential amount to pay back is twice the amount I got. So what, for measurement purposes, is the nominal amount if I, from the beginning onwards, have a probability below 50%? Is it one times the research costs, or is it twice the research costs? And does it shift over? Because you said we have no...
How did you determine the fair value on day one will drive how you set those parameters, Martin?
Yeah.
What I would say is that once you have set them, you do not go on keep reassessing them. So I have that...
So it would be once, yeah, right? I mean, if the probability is below 50%, then it would be only once. However,
That comes with any probability-weighted measure which you are doing, and I don't think it's unique to this one.
You don't just weight one probability, is what Kumar is saying. You have to weight a range of them. And one of those ranges, one of the items in the range, is the fact that you may have to pay back 200% of the face. In the facts we were given, one of the possibilities is that you have to pay back two for one. Because research is successful.
So your nominal would be two times the cash amount?
Well, that's one of the probabilities.
Weighted by the probability of that.
Yeah, that's clear. Weighted by the probabilities. Okay.
You're bringing me to the joys of scenario analysis and impairment, Martin.
Okay. Charlotte?
I have to think, I'm totally confused now, I have to be honest. I thought I understood this before, so I just want to try and get a few things clarified. I don't understand how, if it's if it's your financial liability, so you can be amortized costs even though you're not meeting the direct, the sort of, it's not payment of principal interest, it's obviously a sort of linked to an underlying, but you're in a liability, not an asset, so you're okay, I forgot that.
No, but you do raise a point which I think Reinhardt also mentioned, why this might not be I also thought, what about an embedded?
Oh yeah, that's
it's an entity-specific non-financial variable, so you're out of a derivative definition.
I'd be fair valuing it anyway, so I'd be all right. but just going back to the way I thought it was a financial liability, it felt like a non-recourse type loan, sort of one where you could just settle by walking away, give back the keys, etc., the same as that. I suppose what I'm struggling with is the sort of the timing of if your probability changes. So if at the beginning I've not got there's no reasonable probability that it will be waived. It seems very clear that it is in IAS 39, 32, amortized cost, whatever. And if at that beginning there is a reasonable probability it will be waived, it would seem clearly to be a government grant and into that. Fall into that section. I suppose the question I have is what happens during the life of it if it becomes. It's not clear to me that paragraph 10, is that during the lifetime of IAS 20, is that a during the lifetime question or is that at the beginning question? So if during the lifetime it changes, do you flip, say you're a government grant?
What I was saying is that if it's a financial liability, on initial recognition it has to be measured at fair value.
Yeah. Right.
You bring in the probability weighted measure then.
Yeah. It won't flip to becoming a grant in the middle of it then.
No. I think it would be very much, it would have to be a forgivable loan to start now. And saying that, by the way, the wording in IAS 20 is not crystal clear.
Because it's the initial recognition or, yeah.
But the way paragraph 10 is worded, it sounds like it's very much at the start.
So I would then think if you're a forgivable loan and you don't meet that criteria in para 10 of being a government grant, I don't really see that there's a conflict. I think you're then clearly in 39. I don't think there's a choice going on about which one you're in. You're just in 39, 32 and fair valuing it.
Yeah.
So I'm just agreeing with Tony. I don't think it is a choice question.
Sandy, did you want to come in or did you just not hit the mute button? I think she just didn't hit the mute button. Okay, I'm lighting up like a Christmas tree here on the board. John?
I'm sort of concerned at this, still at this disconnect between a forgivable loan and a financial liability, because it seems to me that the definition of forgivable loan in IAS 20 is loans which the lender undertakes to waive repayment under certain prescribed conditions. So it's not within the control, it's actually part of the actual terms of the loan. It's not within the control of the of the issuer or of the grantor. It's actually if you meet certain independent conditions. That's not the fact pattern here. The fact pattern here is the company may exploit or decide to exploit or not exploit the technology. If it does exploit the technology, it has to pay cash. If it doesn't exploit the technology, it has to settle a non-financial obligation. And we're using paragraph 20 of IAS 32 to say that's what makes it a financial liability. I don't think it can also be in this fact pattern a forgivable loan. I don't think there's any forgivable loan here at all.
Yeah.
But there's the cash element there seems to be a bit later. You're exploiting the technology, then for some reason it goes wrong, and then they do forgive part of the cash payment. That's what I was seeing as falling into the forgivable bit, not necessarily the non-financial bit.
Well, the loan may be forgiven down the track, but I don't think that's actually a forgivable loan, because I don't think that's prescribed terms which actually mean that the loan is effectively forgiven as part of the contractual terms of the arrangement.
I think what you're saying, John, you are equating it to like non-recourse debt in a sense. It's not that just because I can hand back the keys means that my cash payments are being waived. It's just instead of making the cash payments, I hand back keys. So that's what you're thinking about.
Okay, we're going to go with Bob, and then we'll work around the room that direction.
I agree with John. I'm struggling. If we say, okay, this is akin to a non-recourse loan and therefore financial liability, struggling seeing how it's a forgivable loan. But if we did even say that and said, okay, it could be both a financial liability and a forgivable loan, to Tony's point, let's try to make this as simple as possible, and then saying, well, use your judgment, I think that actually complicates things. I think people are going to struggle with how to use their judgment, decide which one. I think then if you really want to make it simple, the simplest is, well, okay, you've got to meet the derecognition criteria in both before you can derecognize. That would be simple.
Which would effectively mean nine. Which means that you have to be nine, because I think you can meet reasonable assurance by meeting nine, but it's not necessarily the case the other way.
Okay. Andrew, then Young Su, then Stephen. Well, Stephen gets board member privilege, so come on back.
Well, it was going to be slightly different, because I didn't think before about, like Kumar makes, about having the loan, I think it is a financial liability, then recognised at fair value. This is a very flaky fair value. I mean, you're effectively valuing research that you haven't yet done. And I didn't realise until you just said it that that's what would happen.
But just to going by the decision of the board, when you don't have prices on equity or they're uncoated, and it could be just as, how shall I put it, have a high degree of measurement uncertainty, I don't think the standard lets you override the recognition criteria because of this.
Yeah.
Equity instruments means I don't have an option there, Steve.
Well,
it's a level 3 measurement, I fully agree. So even if you, I would say if you have a day one gain or loss from a loan, other than here, it's certainly not going through P&L. It's not an observable, it's a level 3 measurement. But I don't think any of
you are an expert.
No, I'm saying normally it's a level 3 fair value measurement. So it doesn't have observable parameters. So
okay, so you're not recognizing the day one
gain or loss.
Okay, right.
Sorry. In a normal financial liability, Tom. Not in this case.
Yeah.
The point
because
I was making.
Because of IAS 20.
But it doesn't let me override the initial recognition or measurement requirements in 9 or 39.
Okay.
I appreciate where you're coming from, but that's where the standard is. That's where the board is.
Some fair values are flakier than others.
But in 9, we deal with this on the day 1.
Right. 13, under 13.
Yeah.
9 and 13, we say you don't get recognized the day 1 game.
Yeah.
The day 1 P&L.
Okay. Coming back to the point you made earlier, Kumar, you said you don't adjust. But what about if, as you proceed, your expectation, instead of being 10% a chance of success, you now think it will be successful, and you therefore you estimate forward your future payments is going to be up to 200% of the original amount? Don't you have to factor that in under IFRS 9?
You revise
your estimated future cash.
That's your AG8 catch-up,
exactly.
Yes. When you start revising and your expectation,
then even under amortized cost, the catch-up will come.
Right.
But it won't be as quick as fair value movements as soon as you, with the retake, Reinhard.
I agree with that. I just wanted to clarify that.
You will catch it up sometime. It's a timing difference, but you will have an AG8 catch-up coming through due course. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, let's just keep going. Martin, Andrew.
You used the wrong paragraph number. Apologies, I was using the old number.
And Martin, Andrew, and then I'm going to see if there's a way to call a quit to this.
Just to be precise with regard to measurement, we have a measurement, we have a settlement choice here, either via distributing the generated IP or by paying a certain amount. This settlement choice does not affect the measurement.
I think you have already brought that in the measurement when you're looking at probability weighting, Martin.
Because if I would settle it via transferring the generated IP, more or less it is, or could be my burned cash, so to say.
But that's already in your probability.
Which is a lower amount than twice the amount of cash I got. And so therefore, I'm concerned what is the measurement from the beginning onwards.
I think if you have to bring in the contingency again, we will be double counting. When you're looking at a probability, in the one instant with a probability, you have a double payout. But you have also other instances where you have failed and you have actually sent the R&D over. That's where the measurement uncertainty is captured when you're looking at the fair value. I wouldn't double count it again.
Okay.
That will happen, that I'm certain about.
We're stringing this out.
Yes.
Tom, Andrew, Tony, you're going to be the last person, I hope.
Yeah. Kumar, just to make sure, because you went back to IFRS 9 and IFRS 13, I fully agree, it's level 3 and there is no day one profit. But in this specific case, when you conclude there is a below market interest rate loan, the difference go to IAS 20?
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's what paragraph 10A of IAS.
Yeah, okay, because that's important. So for this specific fact pattern, the guidance in IFRS 9 with respect to day one profits is not applicable because it's in IAS 20.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Andrew?
Yeah, I suppose the call to keep this simple, but we need to keep it as simple as possible, but no simpler, so to speak. And I'm not very comfortable ending up in a place where we say it's both, or potentially both, a forgivable loan and a financial liability, given we've got different requirements on the accounting for those two possibilities, and then leaving that to a free choice to decide which one you apply. I think the judgment should be focused on whether it is a forgivable loan or a financial liability.
Tony?
I think, and obviously I came in with a particular perspective listening to the discussion around the table, I'm probably going to say two things. Firstly, given the discussion that we've just had, I'm not convinced that it's clear enough through a combination of the financial instrument standards and IFRS 13 how you would actually apply the mechanics. Just given the discussion that we've just had, I kind of figured that I understood it, but given the discussion we've had, I'm not sure that there is a common understanding of how you would actually do the mechanics. So I guess I'm probably disagreeing with the statement in the agenda paper that there is enough guidance and it's clear enough. And given that there are mixed views about whether you could fall into both, then we probably do need to be specific.
Is it that, okay, what is it that you need? Do you need a flowchart? Do you need debits and credits? What is it that you think would solve your problem?
I think, I'm probably going to answer that directly, but I think listening to what Tom has said, and then Martin has said, and Andrew has said, and others have said, I don't think there is a shared view around the table. And I understand that the financial instruments guys might be clear about how they see it working, but we do have an unusual situation here in that the usual guidance about what you do with a day one gain doesn't apply because it would fall into IS 20 and be a government grant. I think people are all seeing it differently. And so I guess given the nature of this discussion, I'm not sure we can finalise an agenda decision today. My sense is we need to bring it back with a little bit more detail about how the mechanics of the model would apply.
Katrina is just...
Katrina's been waving at me throughout. Shut up, was I think was the message.
No, I'm not disagreeing. I just want, and I'm not actually going to say, well, we can, I'm certainly not objecting to bringing it back, but I just want to work out what I think maybe we potentially are agreeing on, and then you can tell me if that's not right, and what maybe we need to do more on. I am hearing a lot of consensus around the fact that in this fact pattern there is a financial liability. And I'm not hearing too much. I know, Bob, you mentioned, but I didn't hear. So I think we seem to be getting consensus around financial liability. What I'm also hearing is perhaps it's the forgivable, given the facts and the circumstance, there are at least a lot of question marks over even suggesting that this might be a forgivable loan. So what I'm thinking, maybe, is there might even be consensus that in the agenda decision we just remove any reference to judgment around forgivable loan, because it looks like in this fact pattern, for all of the reasons we're concluding it's a financial liability, might also make you conclude that it is not, you know, a loan for which the lender undertakes to waive payments. Possibly, so if we just remove that piece, I see Charlotte shaking her, but if we remove that piece of the agenda decision, that might resolve that issue. And then the one other piece that either we add to the agenda decision or we bring back is perhaps the conversation about the day one gain or loss and the fact that it gets, you know, potentially gets treated an IS 20 as a government grant. That's missing at the minute. So we could either add that or that could be part of a follow-up discussion.
Can I just
and
come
I
in?
Think, sorry, the last piece I was going to say, and then please correct me, is I think there was quite a lot of discussion, which I don't disagree with, by the way, that says given the nature of this thing, measuring it at fair value on day one will be complicated and will be difficult, but from my perspective, I'm thinking that's not a zone we want to go into, is going into a lot of detail about exactly how you would work out the level three fair value measurement of this thing.
Okay, let's just get a sense of where the committee is, and we'll use Petrina's outline. Step one, it's financial liability. Show of hands. Okay.
My hand is up.
Okay, Sandy's hand is up. Fei Long, I thought you said.
Up to.
Okay. So with one exception, step one, it's a financial liability. Step two, delete the paragraph about forgivable loans. Show of hands.
My hand's up.
Nine.
Sandy's up. Fei Long.
Up.
Up.
11.
It's
11. Charlotte's a no. Who's the other? Who are the other?
Tony.
Young Sue. Tony, okay. I can only keep two things in mind at once. What was your third step?
To say, do we need to address in the agenda decision that day
the measurement
one,
difficulties?
The day one measurement that would say that potentially when you measure this financial liability at fair value, potentially if there's a difference that might get treated as a government grant. Well, potentially would get treated as.
Okay. I think Martin wants us to do that.
I learned in leadership seminar something about double blind. Sometimes as Tony, I got the impression that we played a little bit double blind. And we had in other non-interpretations, we also had a very, very good stuff paper, for example, IFRS 2 with regard what happens when and what is the accounting for. And that's what I'm missing here. So my suggestion would be to rethink or rework on this issue to be a little bit more explicit. And I do not believe that we necessarily have to change the overall wording here, but make it more explicit with regard to the paper. And then at the next time, we could come back and decide about the final wording. Because if my understanding is correct, your idea was to split it and have part of the agenda decision here and then have a second question.
No, I think
double blind, sorry.
I think the question, no, you state the question. Wait a minute, Stephen wants to come in before we do that.
I accept the answer you're talking about is logical given the wording of 10A, but I remember when we debated 10A, this situation was never raised. It was a below LIBOR type loan from the government. And I'm concerned about stretching 10A to beyond what it was put in to do.
So maybe we need to.
So what does that tell me?
But I don't have an answer. But I'm concerned about the direction that 10A might be taken.
Okay.
So I know what you're saying. From a board perspective, you're concerned that we might be potentially widening the application.
I mean, 10A never seemed controversial to me at the time we debated it, because it seemed entirely logical that if I'm given a zero interest loan and interest rates are 5, well, yeah, I've been given a grant, and you can pretty easily measure it. And this, but what we're talking about here is very different from that circumstance.
Okay. What's your third question, notwithstanding Stephen?
Well, I suppose Stephen's point links directly, well, into it, whether Stephen's point makes us pause then, because my third point was going to be whether we were going to agree either to put in the agenda decision or bring it back to clarify about the debits and credits and potentially that any difference between fair value and day one and the cash payment potentially fits within 10A of IS 20 and gets treated as a government grant.
I'm going to make an executive decision. We can't do that on the fly. So we will bring it back. However,
it'd be still good to get.
We're not going to revote the other two.
We have short memories.
Pardon me? You have a rear view mirror?
No, I think we have short memories.
Yeah, well, we'll remind you. But so we'll bring it back on the application of the fair value issues, which I think is a fair question.
Fair value measurement details.
We're going to bring back the idea of the kind of debits and credits and data. I'm not going into the zone of how exactly.
No, well, it would start from the assumption you decided fair value was this much.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm getting a lot of. I really want to close this, John.
I mean, I just questioned the need to do that. The submission wasn't asking about the measurement of this issue, so I don't really think, I mean, the measurement is what the measurement is. 10A says what 10A says, and I think that we might have concerns about it in this fact pattern, but it basically says if you get a financial, you know, you get a payment from the government, well, it may be a grant element, it may have a financial liability element, and there's lots of other places where there's a lot of measurement uncertainty and it has to be dealt with. So I don't see that the resolution of this issue and reaching an agenda decision is dependent upon anything to do with an assessment of 10A personally. So.
Yeah. But others would disagree.
I'm just making my point.
I was struggling with trying to remember what the original question was and why. I know I was out of it. I would have thought the fact about whether it is or isn't a forgivable loan is key to the question of how you then recognise it. It's not even a measurement question. Yes. So it seems that we just ignored the hard question. I mean, if they knew it wasn't a forgivable loan, they wouldn't have asked the question.
The only piece about the question, Javitov, may have been wrong, is that I am, I suppose, slightly sympathetic to, as you see, mostly I'm like, no, don't bring things back. As I thought, part of the question was, of course, it was very much, is it a loan? Is there a liability? But linked to that was what gets recognised in P&L on day one. So I suppose that's the only piece, I think, of the open piece that perhaps...
And I think there is a reasonable concern that if you say it drops into 20, the day one prohibition goes away, which is a reasonable concern to have. All right, we'll bring it back on those terms. Looking at the agenda... That was I can promise you. Yeah, we were due for a break 20 minutes ago. So let's take a break. Be back at 25 after.